So is this it? Have we come to the end of America? Are we coming to the end of the world? Have we fallen so far that there's no way back? We'll talk about it today, right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Many times on this broadcast, I've addressed the issue, is it too late for America? Is it all over for the nation? Is it impossible to turn back to God? Not that we were ever a perfect Christian nation. But is it too late for us to turn back to God? Is it too late for a national awakening? Is it too late for foundations of truth and righteousness to be restored to our families, to our communities? And I've answered that by saying we're in a grave state. In some ways, it might be too late to recover things in this generation, and there's certainly the possibility of tragic judgment, upheaval, shaking beyond what we've seen. But is this it? Is it the end of the road? Is there no hope? No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that, and I want to assess where we're at. I want to assess what's going on, and I want to talk through some issues in the news that I think you'll find of interest, including one getting a race perspective on the president as well. I think that'll be interesting. I want to hear from you. I'll tell you what we're going to talk about, some of the questions I'll ask in a moment. But here's the number, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. I am encouraged in the Lord because Jesus is Lord. I am encouraged in the Lord because God reigns. I am encouraged in the Lord because I'm his child and I know him, and therefore hope springs eternal. However, I am grieved, I am concerned, I am burdened by so much that's happening all around us. And I find something very common. When I will write about things happening in the society, especially in terms of some of the sexual anarchy and moral anarchy that we face, people will often post, this is it, it's Sodom and Gomorrah, it's all over, there's no way back. I don't believe that. I believe we're in a very grave situation. And let me say this, we've fallen further than we realize. And most of us, even in our lifetimes, if you're my age, I'm 56, most of us, even in our lifetimes, don't realize how far off even our society was when many of us were growing up. And look, some of my life was a byproduct of the 60s. You know the joke, if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. Those who were there get it. Those who weren't, don't. But a lot of what happened in my life, the drug use, the rebellion, the idolatry of rock music and the sin in my life, that was getting caught up in the counterculture revolution of the 60s. And then I got saved in the early 70s and 71. That was the Jesus people movement, the Jesus revolution. It was God reaching out and redeeming. But in so many ways, there were foundations that were messed up, destroyed, in terms of the meaning of marriage, the meaning of family, the meaning of biblical values. So much degeneration in the preaching of the gospel, so much moving away from biblical truth that in many ways we're in worse shape than before. So I always want to sound the alarm, but I want to sound the alarm with realism. I don't want to sound the alarm with realism as if 1 year and it's all over. In fact, tomorrow I want to open up some of the scriptures, go through some of the key scriptures talking about Israel and to see where are we at. Are they speaking about events taking place in our own day? But we're going to get into a few different issues. We're going to talk about religious liberties. We are going to, in fact, let me throw this out right now, all right? Let me throw this out right now, and I will interact with this question on and off during the show. A recent poll that's getting a lot of publicity now has indicated, I'll give you the roughest of numbers, about two-thirds of white Americans disapprove of the job President Obama's doing. About two-thirds of black Americans approve, very rough numbers. Is this a cause of concern? Does it point to deeper racial divide in our country? Or is that just natural bias, easy to understand? We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Over the course of the broadcast today, I also want to interact with some of the comments from some readers of my articles, recent articles in particular. The one about Newt Gingrich, will his moral failures hold him back, that was posted on Town Hall. And then the one on One News Now's website about Rush Limbaugh. Is there a topic that even he won't address? I want to address a few reader comments along those lines as well. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Okay, a few news items I bet you haven't heard. I got this from Frank Pott. Frank is our fire missionary in Holland with Fire Church and involved in national prayer movement there and repentance movement, actively involved in pro-life. You may remember I interviewed him here on the radio show a few weeks back when he was in the States for our missions conference. Hi, Doc. It was great seeing you. I enjoyed being on your show. I want to let you know that here in Holland, after being the first in marrying people with same sex, so this is years back, Holland was the first country, we just fired our first city official who refused to marry a gay couple based on his Christian beliefs. We keep contending for what is true and righteous in God's eyes. You know what's mind-boggling to me? That same-sex, quote, marriage has been legal for so many years in Holland now, and yet this, according to Frank, is the first city official who was fired over this. You would have thought that more would have stood up and said, in good conscience, I can't do this. Good. Here, just picture, this is you. Picture this is you, all right? And you are required to perform the marriage or officiate the marriage or issue a marriage license to two men or to two women. It's a complete violation of your conscience as a believer. No, I'm sorry, I can't. You're going to go ahead and do it? You're going to put your job and well-being and security ahead of your convictions? How about this? From Israel. This report is a little over 2 weeks old. I had it in my in a folder, an e-folder to get to, and just didn't get to it, but it remains relevant. This is from a woman in Israel, writing from the Yad HaShmona community. This is Jews and Christians, all believers, Messianic Jews, believing Christians, living together in the community there. Dear friends, I'm sitting here in my living room tonight trying to get over important material for tomorrow, and I thought to stop and write to some of you about this difficult situation Yad HaShmona is in. Again, this is in Israel. About 2 years ago, two ladies, Israeli women, walked into the reception of the Yad HaShmona guest house and wanted to meet someone to book a wedding. The first meeting went well as the receptionist introduced them to our place and wedding options. In the second meeting, just a few days after, she realized that these were a lesbian couple and not the bride and her friend, coming to get married in Yad HaShmona of all places. She quickly explained that we are a place of believers, both Jewish and Christians, who live together in this community, and faith is the basis of our existence. We cannot perform such ceremony of marriage here. She was polite and friendly and explained as best as she could the special character of our place and faith. The couple left and ended up setting their ceremony up at a neighboring village, but decided to sue Yad HaShmona as a showcase of discrimination and intolerance against lesbians and gays in Israel. They accused us of being, quote, homophobic, gay haters, narrow-minded, and evil. What else is new? And based their lawsuit on the definition in the Israeli law that any service given by a public place should be prohibited to discriminate based on all kinds of stuff, among others, sexual preference, on and on. So they are getting sued as a community of believers, refusing to have a marriage ceremony there for two lesbians. They're getting sued in Israel. Israel needs the Lord. Remember that the great majority of Israelis are not religious. A Sabbath to them is more of a free day and a day of rest than a day consecrated to God. Oh, the ultra-Orthodox community, the very religious community, is growing rapidly. In fact, I'll talk about that tomorrow on the broadcast as well, just give you another update from Israel. If you're new to the broadcast, Wednesdays we focus on moral cultural issues, Thursday Israel Jewish people issues, Tuesday Bible theology apologetics practical living, Monday whichever way the wind blows, whatever's on my heart, Friday you've got questions, we've got answers. So that's what we That's why we're on moral cultural issues today and Israel-related issues tomorrow. But I read this Israel story to let you know this is happening in Israel. Tel Aviv is a very gay-friendly city. In fact, the Tel Aviv city leaders have worked actively with the gay community to encourage tourism to say we're a very gay-friendly city. There are gay pride marches in Jerusalem. Israel is a secular, liberal nation, and then it has this core of very, very religious, very, very orthodox, where you don't dare violate the Sabbath in your community or you'll be physically driven out or stoned. So it's a land of great conflict. The conflict is only going to grow and increase. But as much as I hope you pray for Israel and stand with Israel and support Israel's right to exist and oppose the terrorist attacks and the pressure that comes against Israel, I hope you also realize that Israel needs the Lord. Do not idealize the country. And another news item, Catholic bishops, U.S. Roman Catholic bishops vowed Monday to defend their religious liberty. These are religious liberty issues. These are freedom of conscience issues, are they not? Freedom of choice issues. I'm speaking to listeners in Massachusetts right now. And same-sex, quote, marriage has been the law there for years, and that put Catholic Charities out of business. It's all documented, of course, in A Queer Thing Happened to America, but Catholic Charities wanted a religious exemption because in good conscience they could no longer place children in same-sex households. They couldn't do that, and they asked for a religious exemption. The state said no, so they went out of business. This has happened now in other states and happened in England as well with Catholic adoption services. I'm speaking to listeners in the D.C. area, where D.C. has recognized same-sex marriages performed in other states and so on. There's been a great battle with religious leaders there over this. I'm speaking to listeners in New York, among other places, of course, all over America, but I'm speaking to listeners in New York. There's really been a case where a clerk said, I cannot in good conscience give a license, cannot give good conscience give a license to a same-sex couple wanting to be married. And there's an uproar over that. We of all people should be full of love. We of all people should be willing to lay our lives down for those who don't know the Lord. And we of all people should be willing to stand up for what is right, regardless of cost or consequence. So this AP report says U.S. Roman Catholic bishops vowed Monday to defend their religious liberty in the face of growing acceptance of gay marriage and what they call attempts by secularists to marginalize faith. I'll come back to that story in a moment, but during that first break just a few minutes ago, I got an email from the Manhattan Declaration. Marriage is on the decline, but what? This goes back to some of what I was saying earlier in the broadcast, that things have eroded more than we realize. Things are in worse shape than we realize. Does that mean it's the end? Does that mean it's all over? You say, man, with each new news report, I think it's all over. Or is this just another time to sound the alarm because we are in steady, serious decline? Manhattan Declaration cites a recent USA Today article showing that marriage is in serious decline. And this is not the fault of homosexual activists. This is a symptom of what's happening in our society. The reason we're talking about redefining marriage in same-sex terms is because heterosexual marriage has been so deteriorated. The article says, or the post from Manhattan Declaration, just 50 years ago, 3/4 of Americans were married. Today, those numbers have dropped to half. A survey done by Pew Research Center revealed that marriage is becoming obsolete. The writer of the USA Today article says that part of the decline in marriage can be linked to weddings performed by non-clergy. Isn't this fascinating? And according to the report, the USA Today writer points out that clergy-less wedding ceremonies lack the necessary emphasis on the covenantal relationship between husband and wife. So when we just get away from these foundations, and like I say, they have been terribly eroded, when we get away from this, the problems that arise are bigger than we realize. And I want to say plainly that there is no superficial solution. What God wants to do in our lives and in the church and in society is upheaval bigger than we realize. more extreme than we realize. Now, that's the very thing that God is about doing, shaking everything that can be shaken, that only the unshakable things may remain. But please hear me. Putting a Band-Aid on someone with a heart condition is not going to solve the problem. Just having another nice religious service or a new teaching or an exciting meeting is not the solution. An outpouring of the Spirit that does not bring an awakening that affects the very foundations of the church and the society will just be like putting a Band-Aid on someone with heart disease. How deep are we willing to let God go? Oh, he wants to. He wants to. How deep are we willing to let God go to change us and to change society? Back with your call. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I started the broadcast today by asking the question, is it all over for America? Is it all over for the world? Is everything heading down? Is there no hope of a turnaround? And I said we're in a dire state, but I believe that God can turn things around. And I personally hope that Jesus will return in my lifetime. I mean, who wouldn't, right? But I have no assurance that he will. I have no assurance that I'm any more right than the generation before me or the generation before that and those who thought that Jesus was coming back in their lifetimes, or perhaps the believers in the first century who expected that, or in the days of the apostles. I have no scriptural evidence that this is it, that we are the final generation. If you differ, feel free to call in, 866-34-TRUTH. I have no scriptural evidence that we are the final generation. And I have no ministry evidence that we are, meaning it's not like the Lord said, okay, you're done with your assignment. That's it. You're over. It's over. I said, do this, 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 and it's all done. And that's what he's telling everyone in the world. No, I mean, he's putting vision in our heart and plans in our heart and burdens in our heart. And even in terms of the Great Commission, there are more than 2 billion people that haven't even heard the name of Jesus, let alone understand the gospel message. They've never even heard his name. They don't even know that such a person exists, that such a person came and died and rose from the dead. What about them hearing the message? So that's all things put aside. And if you have kids and grandkids, some of you know there's a calling of God in their lives, and you see God raising them up. And so, in my mind, you plan for the next 100 years, and then you work as if today's your last day. You work with urgency, purpose, but also with vision. 866-34-TRUTH online, AskDrBrown.org. Ron in Irvington, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes, Michael, good show, good work that you do. But I'm surprised by the question, and maybe not by the question, but by your suggestion that there is hope. I don't see any evidence of that. In fact, you know, I would question, you know, who does have some evidence that we could make things better. There's been no evidence since man, you know, since the Garden of Eden. We're on a 45-degree angle heading down. And isn't that the script? Isn't that the point? Isn't that what God is suggesting, that on our own, apart from him, we cannot make things better? And he's left us to say, go ahead, try. And we're ruining everything that he gave us. Mm-hmm. Now, whether we're in the last days or not, I happen to think that we are within, you know, maybe 50 years or so. By ourselves, we can't fix anything. Just look
all
around.
Right, so, Ron, yeah, an important question for you. And by the way, if I had to bet that Jesus will be returning within the next 50 years or outside of it, I'd still bet within the next 50. I mean, that's still my anticipation, and hopefully in my lifetime. But what I'm wondering about is this. Everything I've said is talking about God intervening, God moving, God working. I have zero hope that we can do it, that we can bring about the change, that we can make things happen. I'm with you on that. Zero hope for that. nor am I saying that the world is going to become some ideal, perfect, or wonderful place before Jesus comes. No, I expect there to be extreme wickedness before he comes. But do you see no hope for an awakening or an outpouring, or do you see no countries, for example, that 100 years ago were in total spiritual darkness and now like a third or a half of the people profess faith in Jesus? I mean, isn't...
No, I think that's a different thing. I think I think, you know, we're to do our job by trying to, you know, convert the world to the best that we can, you know, God working through us. So I'm not, don't misinterpret that. I'm saying it's just all over, raise the white flag and everything. So yes, maybe some countries can come to a greater awakening of Jesus and my next door neighbor, and there could be some of that. But to think that there's going to be a revival in America or the world whereby we become what we were maybe 200 years ago as a nation, a Christian nation, no, I don't see that at all. I see that
so,
on...
But you, do you see... Oh, okay, so here's the point, though, Ron, and I think this is an important conversation to have, all right? Here's my question. Since we don't know exactly where we stand in terms of the prophetic calendar, right? We can surmise, we can guess, we can pray, but we don't know exactly where we stand. And since the Bible encourages us, God encourages us to ask and to believe him, and since he promises that he'll move in the midst of his people and so on, why couldn't we believe these things? What if people said the same thing to Jonathan Edwards 200 years ago, that the state of America is such that it could never go back to the way it was in its Puritan foundations? Well, or if that's what they said before awakening in the 1800s, that
here's the point. Obviously, God can do anything, okay? There's no question about that. The point is, though, that first of all, I don't see any evidence. And if I went back, you know, 1,000 years, there's no evidence that says that, yes, things get better. I don't think things get better.
Well, have things gotten better for the Jewish people in the world since the days of Nazi Germany to having their own country today? Have things gotten better for black Americans from being slaves to having a black president?
It's almost imperceptible.
Well, I don't think it's imperceptible to the Jews living in Israel or to black Americans.
Right. But they're still being, I mean, look at the nation of Israel. Look, they are constantly on
I understand
alert.
That. I mean, I understand that. But
so
we're not talking about perfection. Hey, listen, Ron, I've got to run. But I appreciate you weighing in. I think that you speak for other listeners as well. It's a conversation that we want to continue. Here's my big question, though. Show me in the Word where I can't believe for God to do something radical in this generation. Show me in the Word where it says it's too late. Is that fair? Is that fair of me to ask that? Show me that in the Word. All right, we've got a whole lot more to cover. Those that won't be staying with us, please go online, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. Later today, you can listen to 2 full hours of broadcasting. We've got a surprise in the second hour as well. Remember to weigh in on the different articles we've been sending out e-blasts. If you haven't gotten them, just go to our website or our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown. You can get links to all my latest articles. Weigh in there. I'm going to be interacting with some of the comments on those articles as well. Talking about the recent poll, talking about some racial-related issues. And then we're doing something special. We got a great response to this a few weeks back, so I decided to do it again today. If you don't have a copy of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, we're going to give it to someone to a gift. Order a copy. In fact, you can order as many as you want at this price. $25 for the hardcover, plus for free, a 2-hour DVD debate with Harry Knox, who's a gay activist, claims to be a born-again Christian. We had a 2-hour debate on a Christian response to homosexuality. That's free, so it's $40-something of material, postage paid free. Tell us if you want us to sign it to you or to someone else, and I'll do that. But call the order, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. The book and the DVD sent your way.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So let me explain to you what I'm seeking to do on the broadcast. On the one hand, I want to sound the alarm loudly, clearly. So if anyone is complacent, if anyone is asleep, if anyone thinks these are not urgent issues, if anyone thinks this is something we don't need to pay attention to as believers, then this constant alarm will stir your heart, will awaken you, will cause you to search your own life, cause you to cry out to God, cause you to stand and do what God allows you or calls you to do. On the other hand, I want to push another button. I want to sound another tone which says there is hope in God. If we will not be complacent, if we will live with a sense of urgency, an answer to the old question, why is it that we don't have revival, the old answer still remains true. It's because we're willing to live without it. I'm talking about visitation. I'm talking about awakening. But unless we feel and sense and recognize the urgency, we will not take the necessary measures in prayer and seeking God and crying out and repenting in our own lives and getting things in order and standing up where we need to stand in our society. It's on the one hand. On the other hand, if we have no hope, you know, the Bible says it's all coming down, it's all over. And I'm not demeaning that position. I know that some people read the scriptures and that's what they see. Okay, I'm not insulting those that hold to that. I'm simply saying if that is our viewpoint, we won't be crying out to God for revival. We won't be resisting the downturn in our society in 100 different fronts. We'll just be saying it's all over, it's all going down. And I ask you, who do you think wants us to have that mentality? Who do you think wants us to have the mentality of throw in the towel? And our last caller was absolutely not saying throw in the towel. Okay, it was a good conversation, a necessary one to have. But who do you think wants us to have the mentality that says throw in the towel? Who is it that wants us to have the mentality, no use praying, no use crying back, no use seeking his face, repenting, believing for revival, no use? Who wants us to have that mentality? Not the Lord. Not the Lord. Shouldn't the devil would be pleased if we did? So I want to throw this out to you. While I sound the alarm, I also want to sound the message of hope in God. And who knows what he will do if we turn to him? I can tell you what will happen if we don't. America will not exist as we know it. And in many ways now, it's hardly existing as we knew it. But if we do cry out, oh, I expect upheaval and shaking beyond anything we have ever seen in our history. In our history. And yeah, I know we had a civil war. I'm not talking about a civil war. I'm talking about a shaking beyond anything we have seen, even a shaking greater than a civil war. I expect that. Do I expect Christians to take up arms? No. I'm not talking about Christians taking up arms and Christians being part of a physical civil war. No. It's the last thought on my mind. I'm talking about God shaking things. I'm talking about upheaval. I'm talking about the consequences of our sin. Do I believe it's too late? N-O. Do I believe that if we remain complacent or if we have no hope or if we are not urgent, that it is too late for this generation? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And perhaps for our nation as a whole? Could be. It all depends. It all depends on the people of God earnestly seeking his face. You say, well, what about God's will? Well, God's will is that if his people will earnestly seek his face, he will respond. Even a view that combines a Calvinist and Arminianist slant, Matthew Henry famously said, and I may not have the quote exactly, but that when God is ready to move, he gets his people praying. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, time is a little short before the break, so Nathaniel in Boston, you will be first up, and then we'll get over to a bunch of other callers, so stay with us. I just want to make this one quick comment about my column on Newt Gingrich. When I said, do we believe in forgiveness because of the multiple marriages and the adulteries? Do we believe in forgiveness to see the kind of person we want to lead our nation? We can completely forgive and look at him as if he never sinned on the one hand, but would he be qualified to be president is a separate question. It's not.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire today. Boy, there is a lot to talk about, a lot of folks I want to get to interact with, so we're going to go right to your calls, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Nathaniel in Boston, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Great. I think it's a wonderful message. I think the question would be what we see as a revival. I think we have already decided what revival is going to be, and that could be the problem. I think also if I use the example of the Pharisees when Jesus came, what they expected for revival was that he was going to come and set up the kingdom of Solomon. And sometimes that is the problem, that we have already decided, but this could be the revival. When Jesus came, his revival was bringing to light the word of God. And It's possible that God is using this scenario as the revival.
So what exactly, flesh that out just a little bit more for me. What would that revival be? You're talking about the revealing of sin or the state of things?
The revealing of sin. That revival would actually bring about the need for the word of God. And it would also bring about how far we have actually fallen from God's precepts and standards.
Right.
Because you see, with the Pharisees, they had created a system, and they had believed this system was God's system. But when Jesus came, they didn't recognize him because they expected him to do something that they had created. They expected Solomon's kingdom. And it was never God's intention to really, build that type of community.
All right, what we could be doing today is we have our church system. We have our churchianity or Christianity, and we're expecting Jesus to come and prop that up and make it bigger and better, whereas he may want to shake things to the foundation. Yeah, that's why I constantly say it has to begin with us, and we need change more radically than we realize. And I say that as one who's been through a time of personal revival in my life in the Lord on a couple of occasions very deeply. And each time, boy, the upheaval was deeper than I realized. It's like we say, all right, Lord, come in and it's almost like a business is having some problems and you get some consultant in and you want this consultant to show you how to make more money. And he says, oh, the whole foundations are off. Your whole approach to business is wrong. You've got to completely realign yourselves and redo this from the foundation up. But that's what it's going to take. Hey, Nathaniel, thank you for weighing in. I agree. We can have a preconceived idea. Lord, make us bigger and better. Oh, Lord, just bless what we're doing so it's bigger and better. Well, if what we're doing was so great, America wouldn't be in the state that it's in. If what we're doing was so wonderful, America would not be in the state that it's in. We just, more of the same will only produce more of the same. We need radical change. Are we willing to have it? Are we willing to have it? I constantly live with that attitude before the Lord. I don't mean that I'm perfect about it, but Lord, however deep you have to go to bring about the change, whatever upheaval it bring in my own life, whatever change and approach to ministry and service it would bring about, Lord, I just want to glorify you, whatever the cost, whatever the consequence. At least I'm doing my best to humble myself before him with the hope that whatever he wants to do, he won't tell me one day. Leonard Ravenhill always used to say this to me when we would spend time together. Mike, I don't want the Lord to tell me one day I had more things to tell you, but I couldn't because you weren't ready. Let's live in such a way that if the Lord has to really speak something that hits us right between the eyes, we embrace it, knowing that God's correction brings life. 866-34-TRUTH. Justin in Houston, Texas, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for the opportunity. And I like what the gentleman just said and what you said in response. And I'm going to just make my comment, and then I'm going to get off the line.
All right.
I was just going to quite simply say that the Bible says that times are going to get darker, but light shines in the dark, and I think the darker it gets, the brighter the light's going to shine in the dark.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. In fact, let's think about communist China, okay? 50 years ago, before the rise of communism, there were probably less than 1 million believers in the nation. Now there are over 100 million believers in the nation. What if there had been the expectation with everything coming down there and the persecution and a state of affairs that we've never known in America in terms of an anti-God state, something that we have never known before the way it was in China, and the harsh persecution and the shutting down of churches and missionaries having to flee for their lives. Look what God's done. Look at what God's done. Africa, 100 years ago, some of the countries, tiny percentage of Christian or no percentage Christian, and now some of them, 25%, 30%, 50%, professing faith. God knows that the discipling needs to go deeper and not all the conversions are real, but you're talking about continental change. The gospel spreading in India in the midst of difficulty and persecution. You say, yeah, well, look at Europe. Europe's in total decline. America's in the same path. That's the way it is right now. No question that's the way it is right now. There's no question there is a terribly messed up, compromised, watered down, diluted, misleading message that is being preached from pulpits and taught on radios and TVs and circulating through the internet and in books that is adding fuel to the fire of national and social and spiritual degeneration in America. But God, we just need to take things seriously. Look, it says in Ecclesiastes, better is the end of a thing than the beginning. Well, it's not making a doctrinal statement, but that's how I see it with the Lord, that he is going to move mightily in the earth beyond anything we've seen in the midst of all hell breaking loose. That's my personal expectation. 866-34-TRUTH. Sean in Middlesex, New Jersey, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown.
Good afternoon.
I think that before the Lord comes back, that there will be one last harvest, and I would be honestly disappointed if there wasn't. I think we have a great and loving God, like you'd said before, and I believe that he wants to give everyone one last chance, and it looks like between North America and Europe, with the financial situations of the two continents, that things are shaping up where people might seem to need God a little more than they think they do.
Yeah, it could certainly, the shaking that Europe is in the midst of and could be in the midst of and potential things in America and other countries, who knows what comes out of that. We're not saying that God hurts people to make them see their need for him. We're saying that God allows the fruit of our labors, that allows us to reap what we have sown and to open the door to demonic influences and demonic attack. And then in the midst of that, divine discipline, yeah, it can bring a crying out, a seeking him. And many people, when all is well, get complacent. Come on, how many of us would fast if we didn't have to? You know, if we didn't feel urgency. How many of us would shut ourselves in a room and cry out to God and pray or have an all-night prayer meeting unless we felt some sense of urgency? So, yeah, shaking's going to come. And then here's the other thing. We don't know the clock. We don't know if Jesus is coming in 5 years or if he's coming in 200 years. I mean, scripturally, I can't prove either one, although I live with expectation. But, Sean, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Roger in Westchester, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Are you familiar with the teaching of Jonathan Cahn called The Harbinger?
Yeah, I actually need to have Jonathan on my show and need to get in touch with him, but I haven't read his book. I have just gotten the synopsis in terms of divine judgment and where America is at.
Yeah, that's right. I seem to be good. To agree. I came in on the middle of the program when you were talking to that guy who said he doesn't see, you know, the chance for a revival. I tend to agree with that. Although, you know, God's grace is so immense, like look at the way things are today, and yet he still waits, you know, for people to believe. But Jonathan's teaching is really on the Harbinger is really great, and I think we're very close to the end.
Got it. Hey, Roger, thanks for weighing in. And that's a reminder for me to get hold of Jonathan. Last time Jonathan and I saw each other was at the Atlanta Motor Speedway, if I'm correct. I mean, we probably ran into each other at a Messianic conference or something, but the last time we were really side by side was at the Atlanta Motor Speedway there was a fundraiser hosted by her friend Dottie Solomon, Messianic Jewish leader, and she raises money to help poor people, needy believers in Israel, and there are many such. And right. This particular fundraiser, there were eight of us who were going, or 12, one for each tribe of Israel. We were each going to drive a NASCAR race car for eight laps as fast as we could. You have a lead car going in front of you, and then you follow. They have about four cars on the lap and the track at each time. And you get people to sponsor you. You know, $100 per mile per hour. We just signed our lives away. I mean, the form said, you may die, you may be seriously injured. We all signed our John Burness and Paul Wilbur and Jonathan Kahn and me. And yes, I hit 142 miles an hour, 142 on a bank track. Yo, yikes. Fastest lap, 126 miles an hour. Wow.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Okay, just one quick note about the NASCAR deal. When people say, you got to be crazy to do that, it's like, well, what are you talking about? He's going to drive. Well, you have to climb in through the window, and you've got this flame retardant outfit on, and then you got this neck brace behind you, then the helmet, and then they put the steering wheel in because you need that space to get in. And then when's the last time you drove a stick shift right on top of it? So you got to get going. So we're pulling out of pit road, and we're up to about 80 miles an hour. You know, I'm following the driver ahead of me. He's supposed to be four or five lengths behind them, and I'm doing okay. And suddenly he takes off, and I tell you, it was terror. It's like, oh my god, I made a big mistake. Now, by the way, our offices are just a few miles away from the Charlotte Motor Speedway here, right? So this is the home of NASCAR where we live. But I felt like you're on a roller coaster. You're on a roller coaster, and you realize, oh no, I made a big mistake. I shouldn't have done this, but it's too late. That was the first feeling, and then when I overcame that. The next feeling was profound admiration for NASCAR drivers. I thought, oh, my God, they go like 50, 60 miles an hour faster than I am at least, and they're inches away from each other, and they do it for 500 miles. And then when I got past that, I just had a blast, but it was bone-rattling. Just a little personal story there, 866-34-TRUTH. Kathy in Ozone Park, New York, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I just have a comment to make. I'm a Christian woman, and I would love to see revival, Christian revival in this country. But I live in an area in New York that has become heavily populated with people of the Islamic and Hindu faiths, whereby, houses are being torn down in my neighborhood to put up mosques and Hindu temples, and it's very frustrating to me as a Christian to see what I once thought of as a Christian nation now having Christianity, you know, slowly but surely and progressively sliding down the religious ladder, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's very disheartening to me, and I find myself being resentful. Which I don't want to be, but I find myself being resentful because, you know, these people of the Islamic faith are trying to recruit people into their, into their religious beliefs, and it's really, really frustrating to almost be an outcast, you know, in your own country, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, and Kathy, obviously living in the midst of it is a more intense situation than people can realize from the outside. There are a few thoughts. On the one hand, there were foreign invaders that God sent into Israel because of sin and to awaken them and judge them.
Yeah.
And there's a certain aspect of people coming into our borders that ultimately want to transform our nation in ways that would shock us. On the other hand, we have to redeem every situation. You don't have to go to an Islamic country where you couldn't preach freely. You don't have to go to a Hindu country where you might have difficulty preaching freely. But if they're going to be out and proud, you've got to be out and proud. And I'd encourage you to find some friends who have a real strong missions heart and to say, okay, what can we do? How can we show them a better way? How can we show them the reality of Jesus? How have the people over in your home build a relationship and show them who Jesus is, the reality of forgiveness of sins and transformation. But yes, this is, Kathy, yet another way in which we see the negative transformation of America, not in terms of immigrants coming in with different beliefs, but in terms of the imposing of beliefs or a system where you can have, say, a mosque with a prayer call blaring through the neighborhood, and yet Christians want to have an event in the park and couldn't have it. But yeah. May the Lord help you, Kathy, to turn this as an opportunity for growth and for sharing the gospel. And instead of resentment, I appreciate your honesty very much. Instead of resentment, to have a heart of, all right, praise the Lord, you're in my country. I'm going to preach Jesus to you. And who knows if God can bring a harvest out of this. I'm sure he can. 866-34-TRUTH. Rob in Sparta, New Jersey, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. I just want to say I love your show, and I think it's a great job that you're doing, spreading the word out there. I had a question, but I guess being on hold, I hear all these other comments and whatnot and these calls coming in, and something came to mind. You were speaking of revival and awakening and all, and the second coming of Jesus Christ. I believe, even though we do not know the day or the hour, I do believe, and this is, again, my own perception on it, and I guess correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe God is, or Jesus Christ is leading that up to us, because the Bible states that we need to go out there and spread the gospel to the four corners of the earth. And the quicker we do that, I do believe the quicker Jesus Christ comes back.
I agree. God is working together with us. He absolutely knows the very moment, the precise second.
Exactly.
We don't know it, but that's also exactly. Because he sees the end from the beginning. So, excuse me, he is working with us. But I think the very important point to remember is 2 Peter 3, it talks about how we live, the lifestyles that we live, and that we can speed his return, speed his coming. Mm-hmm. So rather than having a fatalistic viewpoint, it's just fixed at a certain point, to say, Lord, through our obedience, through our holy living, through our prayer, through our evangelism, we can help speed the coming of the Lord, return him to the earth. Yes, he's working with us. I personally believe that theologically.
Yes, yes. And I'll make my question quick. I'm a fairly new believer. I haven't read the Bible all the way through yet, but I've heard a lot of people talk, and I've heard this comment made that somewhere in the Bible where it states the generation that sees Israel come back as a nation, or the people of Israel come back as a nation, that will be the generation that sees the second coming.
Of course, I heard that when I was a new believer, and we were told it was going to be before 1988, of course, 40 years from 48. Then others said, no, it's Jerusalem being back in Jewish hands, 67. That would have meant 2007. Let's just say that those verses are subject to perhaps different interpretation, and that Israel being back in the land and Jerusalem being back in Jewish hands is of momentous importance, but you can't just set a clock and say that means X number of years from then. We've been wrong about that over and again. In fact, I'll touch on that more tomorrow as well. Okay, we're doing something again today that we did a few weeks ago and got a great response. And I realize with holidays coming, you may want to take advantage of this. Get a copy of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. I will sign it for you or for whoever you ask us to sign it to. Just give those instructions to our team that takes the call. So it's a great holiday gift, all right? Super eye-opener, and we'll get some talk under the Christmas tree or the Hanukkah menorah or wherever. Okay, and my two-hour DVD debate with Harry Knox, who claims to be a gay Christian. A reduced price, we'll pay the postage, 1-800-278-9978. But take advantage of that, all right? 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line, regardless of what your end-time theology is, regardless of where you consider we are on the prophetic timetable, you have today. I have today. What are we doing for God today? Are we standing tall? Are we believing? Are we shining the light? If not, why not? So is this it? Have we come to the end of America? Are we coming to the end of the world? Have we fallen so far that there's no way back? We'll talk about it today, right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
As sometimes happens, I say certain things, I write certain things that cause controversy. I don't do it just for controversy's sake. That's foolish and immature, doesn't do any good. But I will often say things or write things knowing that they could stir controversy. My goal is light more than heat. My goal is truth more than controversy. But how many people know that? That when we are faced with controversy, often that helps us sort issues through. How many of you have grown in your understanding of Scripture when someone challenged what you believed, and then you really had to dig or study? Or someone challenged your worldview. Well, why do you hold that? You really had to think about it. So I don't mind the controversy at all, as long as it gets us somewhere, as long as it's constructive. I've been interacting with a rabbi friend for years, on and off for 10 years now, often weekly. We've been interacting online. I can't do that as much. We try to talk as well on the phone on a regular basis. And we've each said to each other that the interaction is helping sharpen our understanding of Scripture. So I made reference yesterday to a few articles that I wrote, one about Newt Gingrich's past moral failures. Will that hold him back from being a presidential candidate? Another one about the pedophile elephant in the gay activist closet, and another one about the topic, it seems, if I'm rightly understanding, that Rush Limbaugh won't even address. And that has stirred up some controversy, and there are a few comments I want to interact with, give you further insight as to what I'm saying and why, hopefully give you perspective of how we should approach things as believers, as what's happening in our country as well, and continue the discussion about where we stand on the prophetic timetable. We'll do it more tomorrow with reference to Israel. But is the clock ticking in such a way that it's over for America, that we have seen our best days in the past? I've addressed this many times on the broadcast, but in light of the constant alarm sounding that I'm doing and telling you about the latest things happening in society and what's happening in our children's schools and media and on and on and on, there's another controversy over a lingerie ad featuring a mother and daughter in what looks like sensual embrace. Say, what? Yeah, and people saying, well, you're just reading it wrong. You're taking it wrong. What's wrong with that kind of embrace? Kidding me? And I don't know what all the pictures are about. Just read some of the report. Anyway, we're in a mess, capital M-E-S-S. But God's able to turn things around. But the turning is going to be more radical than we think. Again, it's like going to a doctor because you have a certain pain and you think he'll just give you a pill or tell you just the need to do this and the pain will go away. And you go there and instead you need to completely revamp your entire life from inside out. And if you don't, you're going to die. We didn't expect to hear that. We're just looking for a Band-Aid kind of answer. So we'll be interacting with where we are as a state of the nation today. I'm going to be joined by another host. We're going to do a simulcast with another radio program a little bit later this half hour. We've never done this before. A man that could be even more hated than me in some circles. We're going to be connecting with that. But I've got one other question for you. I threw it out at the beginning of the first hour, and I never came back to it. A recent poll indicates that, roughly speaking, two-thirds of black Americans approve the job that President Obama's doing. Two-thirds of white Americans disapprove. Does this point to a serious racial divide, or is this just natural bias? No big deal. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire today, 866-34-TRUTH. This is not a major thing I want to focus on, but I'm just curious to get your thoughts. Recent polls indicating that black Americans strongly approve the job that Barack Obama is doing, just talking about numerically, the strong majority approve. White Americans, the strong majority disapprove, which, of course, with numbers, that would mean that there's a low approval rate for the president. And no president who's had an approval rate under well under 50%, you know, in the low 40s or mid 40s, has ever been reelected for a second term. But does that point to a deeper cultural divide? Does that point to deeper problems in the nation? Or is that just natural bias? I mean, you're going to have a perspective that's more favorable, less favorable, or is that a big deal? To me, it's not. To me, it's not a big deal. To me, it's understandable, and I, especially with the first black American president, it's all the more understandable. But what do you think? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. All right, before I go to any calls about anything, I want to interact with some reader comments and some of my recent articles. On our own website, if it's Line of Fire, a voice of revolution at AskDrBrown.org, on our own website, I will interact many times, as time permits, with folks who post there or raise questions to what I've written. When I post on other websites, when my articles are on other websites, and then if they're carried on one, they can be multiplied and carried on many others, I almost never, ever interact. But I wanted to interact first with those who wrote about my article, Will Newt's Moral Failures Hold Him Back? And this is on townhall.com. What I basically said was he's risen recently in the polls quite dramatically. He, in many ways, is a statesman, a great debater, a history professor. I mean, just knows a lot. He clearly does not pick on his other Republican opponents and tries to focus on the issues he has with the current administration. In many ways, he would be a great candidate, but then we know the history. He's been married three times. His second and third, meaning his current wife, are women that he had adulterous affairs with while married to the previous wife, and was having an affair while leading the impeachment proceedings, I should say, against President Clinton because of his lies and so on. Can we just say, well, he's acknowledged these publicly? He's not covering up. He has acknowledged these things publicly, and he has asked for forgiveness, and he's even converted to Catholicism as part of his process of repentance or reconciliation or whatever reasons he became Catholic. That's also the faith of his current wife. If we forget, and move on, or you say, well, yeah, I could, but to think of that woman being the first lady, that would trouble me. How strongly can you stand for marriage, stand for the Defense of Marriage Act when you've been married three times? So my question, as people have posted and said, look, one fellow said, you're a part-time preacher. Shouldn't you believe in forgiveness? And others have said, this is not the kingdom of God. I absolutely believe in forgiveness. I 100% believe in the power of forgiveness and thank God for forgiveness every day of my life. Who doesn't, who knows God's perfection and holiness and who knows that we fall short even on our best day as we seek to please him and walk in honor before him? It has nothing to do with forgiveness for me. Someone asks for forgiveness, you extend it. And for me, if I know someone sinned against me even before they asked for forgiveness, I want to forgive them. And if people come groveling and say, hey, it's no problem. It's as if it never happened. I can't tell you how many times people have come, Mike, Dr. Brown, I've blown it, I've sinned, it's terrible. It's as if it never happened. We move on. Now, does that mean that there can be no baggage or that we are convinced of the person's character? I would act towards that person as if they were changed based on forgiveness. And I would extend trust again, but there's also wisdom in terms of how much trust. For example, if I had someone stay in my home and they stole something and they brought it back and they repented, and they said, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. Is there any way I could stay in your home again? Okay, you'd stay in the home again. Genuine repentance, genuine forgiveness. Would I put that person in charge of our ministry finances? Okay, there. In other words, you have to prove yourself in a certain way. Bring forth fruits worthy of repentance. I don't know Mr. Gingrich. I have Christian friends that know him well and think the world of him. So to me, it's not a matter of extending forgiveness. Of course we extend it. It's a matter of saying, okay, we thought he was doing fine in the past and these things were going on secretly. Do we know that his life is good and clean now? Do we know that he's gotten to the root of the problems that opened the door for him to commit adultery and do these different things? So those are the issues. Absolutely the gospel of forgiveness. Absolutely redemption. Absolutely restoration. The other thing is, does it undercut your ability to stand for certain things if you have been guilty of certain sins in the past? Do you follow what I'm saying? For example, if Bill Bennett, tremendous radio host, best-selling author, part of the Reagan administration, he's written books on moral values, and he's tremendous, tremendous insight in so many ways. And yet, he had a serious gambling addiction, which then came out, and he said, hey, I never said I was a moral example. Well, I trust that's all behind him, but I think he would like to be able to say, I am also a moral example, not just what I speak and what I write, but also following my life. So our lives do interact with our messages. And if I had a certain, look, I could never, I'm not called to run for politics or anything like that anyway. I'm certainly not qualified. But the gospel messages that I preach, the spiritual messages that I preach, the type of ministry that I do, you pull out enough quotes that would make me seem like a raving fanatic. You know what I'm saying? You could pull out quotes that would make me seem just like a total extremist, just because I'm talking about spiritual warfare, or maybe we're praying for someone that's demonized in India and the person's getting set free in Jesus' name. You know, or we're preaching by life or by death, we're going to follow Jesus and so on. People could pull those things out, pull them out of context, or just present them in a certain way that, yeah, I've not been living my life to be a politician. I've been living my life to be a servant to the Lord. I'm not saying politician in a derogatory way. I'm just saying that we live our lives in certain ways for good or for bad. And then we have that good or bad baggage, and that will influence things in the future. So that, again, is my issue with Newt Gingrich. Look, right now I'm rooting for him in many ways in my heart, but then I have questions. I have serious concerns because it is damaging to our cause to be saying we're standing for the defense of marriage, and yet, one of our key men, or perhaps our president, has been married 3 times. Isn't that more destructive to marriage than the redefinition of marriage by gay activists? I mean, someone would make that argument. So that, I hope that clarifies things sufficiently, because I want to make clear my love of forgiveness, redemption, restoration, and the power of that in the gospel. 866-34-TRUTH. Got a bunch of other things to talk about, but I want to get back to the question for a moment about where we stand. Is the clock ticking? Do we certainly have been in the last days for the last 2,000 years, according to the New Testament, since Jesus died, rose, and sent the Spirit. But is this it? Do we have just a few years ahead of us? Is the clock ticking? Are we going to see Jesus, in the next 5, 10 years or a year? How should we be living? 866-34-TRUTH. Patrice in Westchester, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
I just want to first say God bless you for what you're doing. I think, you know, when you input so many people into so many things, as far as the Lord is concerned, that's a positive note. And I know that everybody has their own decisions and they have their own way of looking at things, but I do feel that we are in the last days. And the reason why I'm saying this is because our children, you know, the new generation that's coming up is having so much trouble between this and that, thinking that it's okay to live a certain way, it's okay to do a certain thing. And this is our generation that are coming up. And, you know, you see earthquakes and everybody is without sin. But God is not to be mocked. Whatever you sow, you reapeth. And You know, I mean, how much can he, you know, and I know he's God and he can do anything and he can, you know, he can forgive whoever he wants to. But in the days of Noah, when they were also having families and they were getting married and stuff like that, you know, he brought that the ending of that time to them because of their sin, you know. And my feelings are this, is that my whole feeling is for the children of today. How are they going to view, you know, the world in which we live in? How are they going to view? I mean, I have...
Yeah, and let me just jump in, Patrice. That it's a massive question when we look at how this generation is growing up and what they're going to grow up with and things that we took for granted, they don't even know about. Serious question. Thanks for raising it, Patrice.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I got an email earlier today asking if I could join Brian Fisher, the American Family Radio Focal Point broadcast, if I could join him on the air today between 1 and 3 Central Time. I said, man, that's when I'm on the air, 2 to 4 Eastern, doing my show. We have some common interests, and I think we're in a friendly competition as to who is the more hated by certain sectors of society. But we have worked out through the miracle of modern technology a way to do a simulcast right now and to join one another on each other's programs. Brian, are you there?
Michael Brown program, Line of Fire.
All right, Brian, Michael Brown, how you doing?
Michael, very well. This is kind of an innovation here in broadcasting where I'm a guest on your program and you're a guest on mine. Kind of cool.
Very cool. So a dual welcome.
Yes, and welcome to you. And Michael, the reason I wanted to talk to you is I read your column this morning, What Could End Rush Limbaugh's Career? So I don't know if you've talked about it on your program yet, but I would love to have you tell your listeners and mine kind of what you were talking about in that column.
Sure thing. I've talked about it some on my broadcast, but I was saving it again for today until we were together. Rush Limbaugh on November 8th, he's talking about the Penn State scandal. And he says to a caller, quote, you know, if I really wanted to retire today, I could answer you in a way that would end my career. Well, of course, I'm therefore not going to say it. There is a part of the story. It's glaring. It's right in front of everybody. And nobody's got the guts to say it. Nobody, including me. This is Rush Limbaugh. I don't have the guts to bring it up. Nobody does. And the caller says, what's that? And Russ says, nobody has the guts to actually give the explanation for what was going on and why there was trepidation in reporting it. And that's all I'll say. If you can figure it out on your own, fine and dandy. So I asked the question, what is he talking about? And as far as I can tell, I closed the article by saying, hey, if I'm wrong, I apologize. But Rush, if I'm right, speak up. As far as I can tell, the issue is that the acts involved were homosexual in nature. It's not saying that most homosexual men are pedophiles, and certainly most homosexual men in America will hear these reports and be grieved over them, just like heterosexuals are. But in fact, the acts involved were heterosexual in nature.
Or homosexual
and,
in nature?
Yeah, they were homosexual in nature. This was a man with boys and with teenagers, according to the allegations. And we also know just statistically that there's a higher percentage of homosexual pedophilia than heterosexual pedophilia. But this much I know, Brian, I've been told by enough media insiders that this is an issue, homosexual activism, homosexual promiscuity, or anything like this, that will not be touched because it's too costly. And when I went to write my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, which my listeners know is my 20th book, but I couldn't find a publisher willing to touch it, They told me outright, I think it's going to be a great book, but I don't dare publish it because it's too costly to address these issues. And that's what I took Rush to be saying.
Well, you know, and I talked about this on my program too, Michael. I've got some information here about the instances of pedophilia in the homosexual community. You're exactly right. Homosexuals are about 10 times more likely than heterosexuals to abuse children. And there was one study that published in the Journal of Sex Research, I think it was. Let me find that. Or rather, Archives of Sexual Behavior, a study of 229 convicted child molesters, 86% of them identified themselves as homosexual or bisexual. So you've got this, and it's like nobody wants to talk about it. And, you know, it was striking to me that, you know, your point is, you know, Rush Limbaugh has this reputation being this absolutely fearless broadcaster. He'll take on all comers. He'll take on every issue. He's not going to be cowed by anybody, and he won't touch this thing with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I mentioned in the article what happened to Dr. Laura. She's a radio giant, not with the breadth that Rush has, but one of the most influential radio hosts, beloved radio hosts. So some years ago, a little over a decade ago, she began addressing issues of homosexuality, and she did it with the utmost respect that you could ask for, and she got so attacked that a Stop Dr. Laura campaign was launched, and it was just on an $18,000 budget. This is the momentum the thing had on its own. She was going to start a TV program. It got shot down. The Stop Dr. Laura website got over 50 million hits, over 300,000 visitors per month. Protests organized in 34 cities across America and Canada. Over 170 advertisers dropped Dr. Laura's TV show. That's why people haven't heard of it. She couldn't go on the air. She lost 30 advertisers from her radio show, reportedly costing her over $30 million in advertising. That's the boast on Stop Dr. Laura. And I've watched in recent months Microsoft bow down to gay activists just when they saw a few hundred signatures. The CEO of Starbucks bow down. Apple bow down. So this is the reality, and it's shocking. You just put information out. You get vilified, demonized, and people are afraid to even address these issues.
Well, you know, you think about that, Michael, just the power of the homosexual lobby. I mean, they're the ones that are out there saying, we got to protect homosexual kids from getting bullied. Well, who is going to protect us from being pushed around by homosexual activists? That's where the real bullying is taking place. And they're even pushing Rush Limbaugh around. This is kind of an amazing thing to me, and I think you're exactly right. They are bullying Rush Limbaugh. He's cowering in front of them. He's submitting to their bullying because he understands the power that they have. I mean, he's admitting that they could put him out of business. If he said this kind of things, Michael, that you and I are talking about right here, he's basically saying they've got enough juice and enough power to shut me down and terminate my broadcast career. It's amazing what he is conceding about the amount of power to bully and push people around that belongs to the homosexual lobby.
Yeah, and again, if we're reading him right, I don't see any other thing he's saying. Plus, I've been told these things firsthand, and although we have our own media exposure through our radio program, we both do, and we get interviews in different places, I've been told that it goes to a limit because certain people in a certain echelon will not address the issue because it's too costly in too many ways. Now, look, we get links sent to us. Friends will say, hey, have you seen this on Right Wing Watch or something, that they'll have the latest Brian Fisher quote or Mike Brown quote. So the fact it's the two of us, we'll probably be nailed. But I can be sure that you and I will be utterly mocked for the idea that there is gay bullying or gay activist bullying against Christians, against believers, that will just be considered paranoid and so on. But look, we document case after case after case where, look, in England right now, in England, happened earlier this year. I'm sure you've talked about it, but a Christian couple that had provided foster care and adoption for kids for years were told by the high court after gay activists protested that their kids could be, quote, infected with Christianity. They can no longer adopt. There was a Christian cafe owner in England a few weeks ago that was told by police he can't have the Bible playing on his TV screen in a Christian cafe because it contains verses against homosexual practice, and that's hate speech. Yeah. And we have the cases here in America where people have lost university positions or been kicked out of jobs or kicked out of college programs and Catholic Charities and others out of business in certain states because they weren't granted religious exemptions about placing kids in same-sex households. So, of course, it's happening. Of course, it is the principal threat to religious freedom today. And that's why when I launched my speaking tour, Brian, for A Queer Thing Happened to America, we called it the campaign for religious tolerance and intellectual diversity because we see the opposite. Hey, I've got to run, but maybe we can do this again. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for joining me on your end.
Great, Mike. Loved it. Thank you for being with us.
All right. God bless you. All right, friends. How was that? Was that cool or what? Joey, good job, man. We pulled it off. Back with your calls and back with some comments about Rush Limbaugh. All right. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we just did something we've never done before. This was an absolute first, and we are smiling. I got an email this morning from someone working with Brian Fisher's radio program. Brian hosts Focal Point for the American Family Radio Network, works with the American Family Association, and may be more hated than me and attacked for alleged hate speech and things like that. Anyway, we've never even talked as far as I know, but I was asked to be on his show. The problem was that he does his show the same time I do my show, the exact same hours. So they suggested, well, maybe we could hook things up by an ISDN line where we could be on live together. We've never done this before, but I was a guest on his show, and he was a guest on my show at one and the same time. So thanks, Joey, in the studio for working that out. And for those that missed that, just go later today to AskDrBrown.org, click on the line of fire, and you'll be able to hear that. I'm sure these things have happened, but for us. That was a broadcasting first, which means, since it was the first time in our broadcast, so for our broadcast, this was the first time such a thing happened. Get this, now I hope you brace yourself, in the history of the universe. Is that cool or what? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, it's Wednesday. Our focus is on moral and cultural issues, and there are a few different things that we're talking about today, all right? We're asking the question about where do we really stand in America? I mean, is the degeneration so deep, so great that there's no way back, that there's no possible national awakening that can come? I've addressed this from different angles many times, and it's such a critically important question. And for me, it's important to do two things, to sound the alarm so that you're stirred and you're awakened and your attitude is, oh, my God, we're in deep trouble. Oh, my God. But then to turn that, oh, my God, into, my God, I'm going to pray, and I'm going to cry out, and I'm going to believe you. Start the work in me. Start the change in me. We're not just talking about God adding something to who we are and making us bigger and better. Who we are, the church in America, that's a big part of the problem. We're asking God to go down to the depths of who we are and to bring about change and upheaval and shaking. It's not like just fixing the roof of the house. It's like digging up the foundations and rebuilding. But God can do that. If we're serious and desperate enough and seek him earnestly enough, he will answer. He will answer with holy fire. He will answer in a way that will shake our nation. Now, what does it actually mean in terms of this generation? That remains to be determined. There's a lot of stuff hanging in the balance, and that's a question just we're asking. Even this general question, which I haven't asked in a while, do you expect Jesus to come in your lifetime? If so, are you 15 years old? Are you 98 years old? I mean, that colors the answer, doesn't it? You expect him to come in your lifetime. How does that affect how you live today? So we're addressing that. I'm also responding, I'm about to respond to some comments in response to my article, What Could End Rush Limbaugh's Career?, that's on the One News Now website. If you haven't read it yet, by all means, read it. If you didn't get my e-blast this morning with links to this article and my article on the pedophile elephant in the gay activist closet, or my article on Will Newt Gingrich's Moral Failures Hold Him Back, we send out an e-blast every week with all my newest articles and links and highlights from the line of fire. If you didn't get that, it means you're not on our email list. So go to AskDrBrown.org, right on the homepage, AskDrBrown.org. Clay, have you done it yet? My own intern here hadn't done it. He got the e-blast and he hadn't. All right, but you've done it now? Are you doing it right now as we talk? Yeah, right now. You still hadn't done it. All right, so this way we can stay in touch. We can let you know about these things. But I want to interact a little bit with some of the responses to the article, and take your calls as well. Oh, we asked one more question. The recent polls about how President Obama's doing point to a deep racial divide, or is it no big deal? A lot to talk about. 866-34-TRUTH.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Reminder, if you're on Facebook, like our page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown. Okay, let me just deal with this one issue quickly, as there are a few different things I want to talk about today. A recent poll done by CNN and others indicated that, very broadly speaking, two-thirds of black Americans approve of the job President Obama is doing. Two-thirds of white Americans disapprove. Does that point to a deep racial divide, or is that almost to be expected, especially with the first black president, and people are going to see things differently and have certain sympathies? Or you ever watch a sporting event and you have a bias in the event, so you actually think your team or that person is doing better? You know, you can't judge objectively. Is this cause for deep concern? Is this just not necessarily indicative of something really bad? Just want to address that quickly, take a call on that, and then get back to the Rush Limbaugh article that I wrote, some of the responses to it. Want to talk about that with you. Mike in Tampa, Florida, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
What I think, sir, is that it's a little bit of both. And I think there is some deep-seated ugliness, and it's kind of residual in nature, and to wipe out, for us to undertake to wipe out prejudice is kind of to undertake to wipe out hatred. It's a great idea from a practical matter. It's like wiping out sin. I think we're always going to have to deal with it. So I think some of that is there and affects that statistic, but a much more benign factor than the one that you pointed to, and I thought the sports analogy was just perfect, because the whole time I was on hold, I was thinking about me watching Tim Tebow play and how that affects my my perception of what's going on there. So I think a little bit of that is rooting for the home team, and I don't think that's a horrible thing. That's and anything that we need to be overly concerned about.
Got it. All right, thanks. Appreciate
Thank you.
You weighing in. Obviously, there's a divide. We know that. But this, to me, points to what we know as well. Thanks for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. I wrote this article. One News Now came out yesterday. What could end Rush Limbaugh's career? What I said, based on what I understood he was saying, November 8th, was that he will not address the subject, the homosexual aspect of the subject of the Penn State scandal, because it could end his career. For men, you say, how, what? Rush Limbaugh, he's the biggest guy on radio. He saved AM radio. He's fearless. He goes after everybody. I mean, I can't imagine going after some of the people the way he goes after them, and with the public mockery and all of that, without having a whole lot of bodyguards, especially he's not a believing man that's, you know, an intimate relationship with Jesus. He wouldn't claim that. So he's got a lot of savvy and wisdom. You'd think he's got bodyguards, protection, whatever. Just based on the people he goes after, he's got to stir up a lot of opposition. So fearless, and yet he won't address this. Well, why would someone not address it? Okay. Now, he claims that there was actually trepidation in reporting it within Penn State or to the authorities over the same issue. Is that the case? I don't know. So first thing, I was not saying whether his theory about it, there being trepidation reporting it, is right or wrong. I don't know. I've been on radio and I've been asked on other shows, if there was a man caught abusing a girl, a 10-year-old girl, which was the first thing that happened, in this case it was a 10-year-old boy, would it have been immediately reported to police? Would there have been immediate outrage? Would it have been different than if it was a boy being abused? I don't know the answer to that. I don't claim to know the answer to that. To me, both are so horrific and shocking that you know, you think both immediately report immediate concerns to the police. But anyway, so I don't know about that, if it would have been any different. It's either case, a child being abused. But somehow, my whole point is Rush Limbaugh being afraid to address things. You say, well, why would he be? If I'm understanding this correctly, and I close my article by saying if I'm wrong, I apologize. But if I'm right, I make an appeal. Come on, speak up, man. You have the guts. Well, you have lots of advertisers. Lots of advertisers will not be happy with this, and they'll get a lot of flack. And they're out to make money. They're out to sell a product. If associating with Rush Limbaugh becomes a negative, or if it hurts them in any way, he could lose advertising money. And remember, his show is different than mine. We have to raise money from supporters like you and friends like you to pay the bill. The radio stations do not pay us, Christian radio, they don't pay us to be on the air. They have to believe in our message to put us on the air, especially on a national platform. They have to believe in our message. But then we have to come up with funds, and trust me, it's a faith issue to come up with funds so that I don't take a specific salary for being on radio, because our ministry funds are tight, and we have to believe God for funds to pay to be on radio. Yeah, go ahead. Sit right now. Call this number, 1-800-278-9978, now that I've given you the sob story and you're sitting there crying. Send in money. Sure, we could use it. Seriously, we could use it. It would help us become a monthly supporter. Absolutely. But that's not the big point I wanted to make. He makes a lot of money. He makes a lot of money because the company that syndicates him can pay him a lot of money. And he gets that money from advertisers that pay the stations to be on during his shows and other related income. So he gets in trouble with his advertisers. That's a negative. It's also a big company, and they may not share these particular views. In other words, they may be happy to let him be who he is on a certain level, but they may have a lot of, look, someone just told me, who wants to get the gay producer upset? Some major conservative guys, I'm not going to mention names, but major conservative TV guys have had gay producers. They have others working with them closely that are gay. Just on a daily basis, why upset that group of people that are working hard and serving with you and trying to help your other vision? Why upset those people? So it goes on and on and on, all right? And is it a public opinion thing? No, I think it's these other issues, if I am right. But I've been told this in the past, and I was listening one day, or I read a transcript, I forget which, when Ken Hutcherson was on. Now, this is interesting. Ken is a fearless opponent of homosexual activism. He's even taken on Microsoft in the past, former football player, black pastor in Seattle. We got to hang out at a conference a few years back and exchange thoughts. And he is a fearless leader on these things and a very close personal friend of Rush. And he performed Rush Limbaugh's wedding, at which Elton John was a performer. Was he paid like $1 million to perform there? Something like that. That's what I understood. So it's quite an interesting mix. Not that you hate Elton John because you stand against gay activism. No, of course not. But I'm just saying an interesting mix of people that were there participating in the wedding and would explain some of the dynamics of Rush Limbaugh's personal life. So I'm not as judge or jury as a radio host. I mean, compared to who he is and how long he's been doing this and his massive national audience, I'm like a little kid in that comparison, okay? But I'm just saying that's the point I was making. Now, there are folks who posted comments that were saying, oh, well, if there is heterosexual pedophilia, you're going to identify it like that because you're calling this homosexual pedophilia. Of course I identify it like that because that's what it is. Here, someone posted on the One News Now website this report from Mayo Clinic, okay? Mayo Clinic report, I think, from 2007. And I'll just read this. Pedophiles are usually attracted to a particular age range and or sex of child. Research categorizes male pedophiles by whether they are attracted to only male children. Homosexual pedophilia, that's what it's called. A man attracted to male children is called a homosexual pedophile. That's the technical term for it. A man who's attracted to female children is called heterosexual pedophile. Or children from both sexes is called bisexual pedophile. Now, according to this report, Mayo Clinic, the percentage of homosexual pedophiles ranges from 9% to 40%, which is approximately 4 to 20 times higher than the rate of adult men attracted to other adult men, using a prevalence rate of adult homosexuality of 2 to 4%. This finding does not imply that homosexuals are more likely to molest children, which is never a charge that I've raised here, just that a larger percentage of pedophiles are homosexual or bisexual in orientation to children. That's the point I was raising about that. It's that simple. Now, my issue in terms of gay activism, is that there have been gay activists commonly who have sought to reduce the age of consent or abolish it, that there are gay publishers who put out journals of homosexuality, etc., and some of those very people are involved with pedophile journals, that some of the icons, some of the famous leaders in the gay liberation movement were also supporters of, quote, man-boy love. Yuck. In that sense. Those are my issues on that score. But here I was just talking technically about homosexual pedophilia. It is what it is.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, just a reminder, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And by the way, I'm using certain terms, technical terms, words, with the hope that if you've got family with you and others, little children, that they're just technical words, okay? That's why I'm not saying anything beyond that. Plus, I've got no interest in being more graphic in describing any of these horrors. If I should have given a heads up, my apologies, but I tried to read things in a technical way. And even the one term I used about men and boys was used in such a way that those who understand it, understand it. But, you know, the sex trafficking, just a totally other subject, and maybe that's massively heterosexual, human trafficking. A number of our grads are involved in ministering into that situation. Oh, the horrors of it. Friends, we need God's intervention. We really need God's intervention in a very big, serious way. Please don't be complacent about this. Please don't just sit back and say, hey, no problem, you know, we had a good church service. We're in a desperate state. We're in a desperate state. But it's not one without hope. Oh, I thoroughly believe that God is going to act. I thoroughly believe that God is going to turn the tide. I thoroughly believe there's going to be upheaval and shaking like we've never seen. And I thoroughly believe that there's going to be an outpouring of the Spirit that'll rock America. I can't prove it to you scripturally. I'm not saying thus saith the Lord, but I believe it and I labor towards it. And by God's grace, whether the tide turns or not, we'll stand up and do what's right either way. By God's grace, we'll speak the truth either way. But I believe God is going to stretch out his hand and he's jealous for the name of Jesus. That's what I believe, and I hope it ignites something in your own heart of hope and faith to go after God. And look, the reason we had to form our own publishing company, Equal Time Books, in order to get A Queer Thing Happened to America out is because no publisher would touch it. We had publishers tell us, one guy wrote to me and said, I'll be an eager reader of your book, but I don't dare publish it myself. It would be too costly. 866-34-TRUTH, Will in Denver, Colorado. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks, Will.
I was just sort of channel surfing as I was driving, and I didn't hear all your discussion about Rush Limbaugh or Newt Gingrich you mentioned. But and you just very adequately addressed my concerns about, you know, saying homosexual and bisexual and man, boy, you just addressed that. I was really impressed, and I agreed with everything you said. But it's just distasteful for me to hear that.
Yeah, and well, the subject is terribly. Let me just say this, Will. The subject is terribly distasteful. It was horrifically distasteful.
And I don't want to bury my head in the sand.
Yeah, that's the challenge. When I wrote A Queer Thing Happened to America, I would not read any material that was actually sexual in content of any kind, just because it's unclean. As a heterosexual man, I have to be careful about heterosexual sexual stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things involving women and so on, So obviously that's already a barrier that's up. But I was not going to read. I had no reason to have to read homosexual stuff either. But there's we have to know what's happening in schools. We have to know what's happening in places of business. We have to know what's happening in our churches and transformation that's coming and in our society. I mean, Denver, Colorado, you've had in Denver, a boy has joined the Girl Scouts because he identifies as a girl. You've had another boy who gets to use the girls' restroom in the schools because he identifies as a she. You're talking about little kids, 7, 8 years old. We have to know about these things. And even though it's unpopular to address them, we have to. Again, my reason for just using terms like homosexual, pedophile, and so on was the assumption that those who understand what that is understand, and little ears that don't. But we need to understand, and then we need to ask ourselves, do I hate these people? Do I love them the way Jesus did?
I know we need to change our world, but the most important thing is that we know Jesus.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed your little segment before you talked to me about how that's the most important thing, or at least
knowing him and making him known and not losing hope, because he is Lord regardless of chaos happening around us. Hey, Will, listen, I got to run to another caller, but please, Will, visit me on our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and make sure you mark this station and listen. I'm here at the same time, Monday to Friday. But thanks for calling in. We'll get to talk a little bit more another time. Russ, also in Denver, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing well.
Good. I just wanted to make a comment, like on the movie of Chariots of Fire, the guy wouldn't run because it was a Sabbath. He had his personal convictions about things, and he had to live with that. So some people may not have to round it into everybody, but Rush, and everybody's got to live with their own personal decisions and what they
want to
stand up for, live for.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I appreciate Rush's brilliance as a radio host, his insight, his humor, his ability to do 3 hours a day for as many years as he has as a newer broadcaster myself. I've been preaching in ministry since 73, but as a radio broadcaster on a daily basis, that's like 3.5 years. I think he often has amazing insights on political issues, but then there are other things. There's no way I could listen to other parts. I mean, some of the parodies are just dishonoring. Look, I absolutely did not like President Clinton as president in many ways, but to call him Slick Willie, no, I mean, he could have a mockery of our current president, Mr. Obama, and it may be very insightful, but it's dishonoring to me, or some off-color sexual jokes. So I'm not looking to him as a Christian voice. I believe ultimately that he's going to be pragmatic in many ways, and that he's going to weigh, if he makes certain comments, what the responses are going to be. And if it's beneficial for advertising and other things to take certain controversial stance, he will. On the other hand, I believe he does have certain convictions, and he will speak up. And he said that the more they try to silence you, just talking about society in general, you should shout the louder. But Russ, thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. Can I urge each of you to be true to your convictions before God, not to be obnoxious, not to be elitist, self-righteous, but be true to your convictions. We're doing something again today. We did a few weeks ago. Want to do it again, especially with the holiday season coming. My book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, all right, hardcover, almost 700 pages. I'll sign it to you, or just ask whoever you want us to sign it to. We'll personally sign it to them. You can give it out as a gift then. A Queer Thing Happened to America, and my 2-hour debate with Harry Knox, who claims to be a gay activist. Well, he's a gay activist, born-again Christian. That's what he claims. The two together for just $25, postage paid. It's over $40 of material, close to $45. Postage paid, just $25. 1-800-278-9978. The DVD eye-opening, the book you must have. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line: it's easy for us to look at others, even a media giant like Rush Limbaugh, and say, why doesn't he stand up for certain things? But the real question is, what about you? What about me? Are we standing up for what's right regardless of cost or consequence? Or are we trying to save our lives rather than lose them for the gospel?